Greetings, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the podcast. This is our penultimate episode for season two. We got one more after this, and then we will be shutting it down for a brief period of time, and then coming back with volume three. It's been a fun ride so far. Excited to keep it going. Let's jump in. My name is Juan, as always, here with my main brosif, Kevin.
Hey, everybody.
And we like movies. If this is your first time listening and you are unfamiliar, we invite you to go back and listen, check out the different reviews that we've done in special episodes. We've got a hefty catalog for you to check out, and make sure to follow us, subscribe, like, comment if you want to give us feedback or you want to start a conversation, and share with others. If you like what you hear, there might be someone out there in a galaxy not too far away that might appreciate being informed. So we would certainly appreciate that. On this edition of the podcast, we have Kevin's pick. He's got something juicy for us. The film is Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3. Again, this was Kevin's pick. Before we jump in, I'll just tell you a few things about the film for those who don't know. Written and directed by James Gunn, produced by Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios. Stars Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Will Poulter, Sean Gunn, Sylvester Stallone, to name a few. Chukwudi Iwuji, Nathan Fillion, Pom Clementif. She's a big one. She's part of the Guardians. Let's see. Distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. Released on April 22nd. Wait, what is this? Disneyland Paris.
Okay, no, that was Disneyland. That was May.
Okay.
Here.
May 5th, 2023, release date in the United States. Running time, 150 minutes. Budget, $250 million. Box office, just under $850 million. So, has not broken the billion mark. Let's see what else. 81%. Critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, 94%. Audience score for the film. Let me see if there is a tagline for this film. It's time to face the music. Did you know that was the tagline, Kevin?
Now that you said it, it sounds familiar, but I would not have. I was trying to guess the tagline. I was like,
"Oh, you didn't know." It's time to face the music, and I guess, just a brief description or synopsis says: still reeling from the loss of Gamora, Peter Quill rallies his team to defend the universe and one of their own, a mission that could mean the end of the Guardians if not successful. Anything I'm missing, Kevin, that you'd like to add?
Only thing is, I did think the tagline was "Once More with Feeling," but I think that was a secondary tagline. That's all.
I think you're thinking about a different movie altogether.
But no, I got nothing else to add. I think you captured everything.
All right, so Kevin, why don't you go ahead and regale us by telling us why you picked this and giving us your initial thoughts?
I am Groot.
I think that sums it all up. But ultimately, like, I'm not gonna say why I picked it, because of course I picked it because it's a third of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I saw this originally in theaters with the girls, with my daughters, and going into it, I was really hope I didn't like part two that much. I didn't hate it, I just thought it was there. So I was really hoping for a bounce back. And I watched it again, even today. Me see, yeah. It is probably the bet one of the be top one or two best things that Marvel did in Phase 4, because everything else was not that great. And it made everything else that I've seen besides Spider-Man No Way Home, like, and probably WandaVision, like, look a lot worse by comparison. I thought this was really great. It reminded me why we liked Marvel movies. It had a lot of heart. It had a couple of little instances where, okay, I think their situations were a little forced. You know what I mean? Where they were trying to move the story along. But other than that, like, I thought it was great writing. I thought it was great dialogue. I thought character development went really well. I like some of the themes in the story about redemption, about getting a second shot, about you're more than where you came from. And it dealt a lot with overcoming trauma, not just with Rocket Raccoon, but Peter Quill and just a whole bunch of people. You saw these broken people that were overcoming and having to deal with issues that they didn't realize necessarily in the beginning that they had. So
I mean,
go ahead.
you say it dealt with overcoming trauma,
Well,
but
dealing with trauma, dealing with trauma.
that's very, I mean, it's very surface level. It's not
Okay.
really,
Okay.
it's in my opinion.
Well, I don't think we went into a deep dive on, it is, like, again, it's still a kid's Marvel movie also, and it's for adults too.
F-bomb.
But there was an F-bomb. You know what I mean? That came out of
It's a very
nowhere.
big deal.
Oh yeah, that came out of nowhere. But I think it was big. Like, when I say it was dealing with trauma, it was, while they may have not necessarily dealt with it and overcame it, it was coming to the acceptance that, hey, I have something I have to work on here. Does that make sense?
I mean, I guess,
Like, it started down the
yeah.
path. Like, eventually, spoiler alert, like, if we get the Star Lord independent movie, he'll be de hopefully they'll deal with more than that, like, more of his trauma and how he now is back home and dealing with his grandfather and a life that he was taken from.
It was just it. I mean, I
What did you
agree.
think, Juan?
No, I think what you're saying is accurate. It just was not. It was so sort of secondary to what was going on with Rocket, that with Raccoon, Rocket Raccoon, that it was almost, you could have missed that. It was, you really had to. I mean, you said by now this is your third or fourth time viewing this. So in the midst of, stuff going on with the High Evolutionary and really what's the principal kind of issue that Rocket Raccoon is dealing with, the stuff with Peter Quill is just, it felt to me like it was present, but again, in light of those things, it almost felt like it was in the background.
Well, I can say that's fair, because Rocket was front and center on this, even though he was out of it for most of the movie. Like, he was the impetus for everything that was pushing everything forward in the story.
So, why don't I go take my turn and then maybe you can tell us more about what happens in the film for those who don't know. And don't mind maybe certain things being spoiled for them. But anyway, for me, Yeah, I like the film. I can say that of the ones that I've seen, which do not include Spider-Man No Way Home, because I haven't seen that yet. But of the ones that I have seen, this is definitely the best of the bunch of relatively recent Marvel movies and shows. But it was entertaining. It felt very, very long. And I think for me, again, it was entertaining. It was good. I think that I had very high expectations based off of things I had heard from other people. And maybe even just the marketing campaign for it, and even just this being, you know, James Gunn and this group's final hoorah. Expectations were pretty much through the roof. There were some things I wasn't a very huge fan of. Overall, yeah, I thought it was good and entertaining, but I do feel that it kind of, if we're talking about maybe like the gold standard of Marvel, which for many people would be like Infinity Wars, Endgame, even Captain America, Winter Soldier, and maybe one other, you know, that someone might want to include in there. For me, it still falls short of that. It still falls short, I think, of the first one, you know, where... even that one, which was kind of so, I don't, groundbreaking is not the right word, but in a way sort of innovative with the way that they use music. After the first one, it all just felt forced, you know, like just trying to recreate that formula, which hasn't quite worked as well since the first one. And maybe it was because of those specific songs, or maybe because it was just so unexpected and so new. So it feels a little kind of overdone and stale a little bit, that aspect of it. But outside of that, I mean, performances were fine. It was kind of weird seeing Rocket Raccoon kind of be part of the first half of the movie, but not really. I mean, it was even a different voice actor. It was actually Sean Gunn who voiced him when he was younger.
When he was a little one.
So. Yeah. Yeah, when he was a little one. So it was good to get his backstory, but it was weird, like, for the character to kind of really be out of the movie for that first half. I can talk a little bit more later about Adam Warlock, and I wasn't a big fan of the way that he was represented or portrayed in this movie. But anyway, yeah, those are just my initial thoughts. Maybe good, bordering or reaching for great, but falling short.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. Like, to me, like, the best Marvel movies were, you know, the first Iron Man, the first Avengers movie. We have Winter Soldier and Civil War, the first Guardians movie. So I wouldn't say this is better than the first Guardians movie, because it's one of my favorite, not just Marvel movies, but one of my favorite movies. I've watched it 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. Its replay value is really good. It's still up there. Like I said, it's not top five, but it's definitely up there with all those movies. Right. Just that level right below it. Mm-hmm. Which is saying a lot more than the recent stuff that's come out. You know, I haven't seen Quantumania yet, but there's a reason why I keep dragging my foot on it.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, let's say this. What didn't you like about Adam Warlock's character? Like, I can see why you did, but I want to see what you didn't like about him.
All right, so for anyone listening, let me just start off by saying that I did not read comic books growing up. So what I see from these characters on the screen is what I know about them, unless I, you know, do just a search. Watch Mojo does good background on characters if you're ever curious just about the history of a character in comic books or stuff like that, or, you know, or I'll ask Kevin to fill me in. So I don't know how faithful this representation is to who this character is. I felt it's an awesome character. Have been excited to actually see this character on screen since the end credits of the first one. But it was the first one, right? Not the second one.
Second
that
one
had that end credits.
No, the second, was the one, second one. The cocoon, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, awesome character. Loved it when he came on the screen, but then did not like that after his introduction, he was basically just kind of like a buffoon and just comic relief. And I get that, you know, his mother, quote unquote mother, explained that he was like half baked. He was released before he was in his full form. But I just, and even, you know, so the character has a sort of redemptive arc, right? And he changes. I felt like if they would have taken that character more seriously, that would have been, I would have approached that in a much more dramatic fashion, because in the end he ends up doing something really important. But I just felt like throughout the movie he was this incredibly powerful character, but he was just utilized as comic relief, you know, and as just like pretty much like a buffoon. So I just questioned that choice and felt like it just could have been better if they would have just instead approached it maybe more seriously and really approached him as a threat, you know, almost like a Silver Surfer in Fantastic Four: Rise of the Silver Surfer. I just felt like he was just too silly, you know, and not really intimidating or threatening enough after his introduction.
All right, I can see that. Like, he's not at all like his comic book character. Because he was Hash, yeah. But like I think what they were going for was like, oh, he's still childlike. He's like a child, Superman with childlike, you know, behavior. Mm-hmm. The tantrums. The one thing I kind of didn't like, which is what I felt like they were going for, he kind of felt a little redundant to being just like another version of Drax. Because I think like Drax is leaving, Batista's not going to be, if they do another one.
If now you're we talking, have a... I can't hear you. Your screen you're not... froze.
Oh,
I got you now. You're back then, yeah.
So what I was saying, my problem with him, because he wasn't much like the comic book, was he felt a little redundant with Drax being a very like simple character. So if they're going to move forward, that, oh yeah, Dave Bautista's not going to be in it anymore. Drax is, you know, he's retired. Now we have another simple character that we could, again, it could be for laughs, but he just felt a lot like Drax's character, just with different powers. That's the only quibble I had from him. I think Will Poulter did a really great job with him. Like, he looked great. He looked like a Superman type person. So whatever he did to get in shape looked fantastic. And yeah, like I said, and they did force a little, like when he went to go save Star-Lord at the end, they had the little, like, you know, Renaissance looking finger touch part. Like I said, overall, like I liked him. I just thought he was a little redundant because he was like Drax, who didn't understand things and would mess up stuff.
And then something that just a little detail that really annoyed me, and that one of the final shots where they're kind of showing like the new Guardians, which includes, you know, like Adam Warlock and Sean Gunn's character. I don't know that guy's name, Craggle or something.
Craglin, I believe. Yeah.
Him. And they're all like running. Like, why is Adam Warlock running? He can fly.
That is, Yeah, because I think because you see Rocket take off a little bit, I was like, it would have been so cool if he was just flying over them like Superman.
It was just
I did not like that part. Yeah.
Why would he be running? Speaking of Drax, that was one thing I really did like was just how the angle that they took and kind of reminding us, you know, that he was a husband and a father, and kind of emphasizing you know, those fatherly characteristics about him and really highlighting that. I really liked that. I was surprised and kind of interested in, like, I felt like there was a subtle, or maybe not subtle, because it wasn't subtle, but kind of a veiled sort of message, or like addressing kind of like human trafficking, which was, I don't know if that was intended, or, you know, or if it's just a parallel that's, you know, not direct, but just in light of things going on in society today. Like, I was just like, oh, okay. I was not expecting, you know, like a sort of veiled message about human trafficking, which I liked and was really interesting. I thought the High Evolutionary was pretty good. There was another scene, like the one I just mentioned with Adam Warlock, that really annoyed me with the High Evolutionary. So it's the scene in which, right before when, Rocket, you know, scratches up his face. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand why he was the one who ran in that moment, you know, when he's like, and he even said, he's like, oh, I knew you were going to try this or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, aren't you this kind of like dictator with seemingly hundreds of people at your command that you go yourself? And I know it, with him and Rocket, like, it was very personal, that relationship, but it was still weird that he's the lone person running in there.
Cause he does like, call security.
I got you. I knew you. Right. So it was just like, it was just something that needed to happen. It just didn't feel natural to, you know, really what that character was supposed to be. Like, why would you go yourself? Why wouldn't you say to 10 guards, be like, hey, he's probably going to try to escape. Go down there and keep an eye on him.
Yeah, that's one of like three or four things that I felt were forced, and it just happened because the story needed it to happen. You know what I mean? I'm like, that was one of them when I said there was about two or three, maybe four things that I felt, all right, this is happening just so we can have this moment in the movie. That was one. One that you mentioned with Drax was when they were like, oh, you think I'm stupid? And I thought that was really great. And then all of a sudden it led to him, oh, he could speak to the children. And it just led up to that moment like, oh, you never asked me if I could speak to them. And that felt like it was forced. Like, because I thought it was a good scene, but then after they had that moment, I was like, oh, it was just to have the little moment that, like, oh, you think I'm stupid, but you didn't even ask me if I knew how to do this.
Yeah.
Which to me devalued the scene a little bit. But getting back to Drax, like, I loved it. And again, it could be because I'm a dad. And the whole arc with him, where in the beginning he won't dance because that only idiots dance, he says. And then at the end, when he's with the kids, he's dancing. And even with Nebula saying, you're not a destroyer, you're a father. And it does take it back to part one, because all his anger and all his hatred for Ronan and for Thanos were all about losing his wife and kids. And finding purpose in saying, you know what, I don't need to be out there. I can just stay here and help take care of these children. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, got me in the old... My daughters were, like, hugging me. I'm like, oh, feels. My babies. Yeah. The old heart,
got
the old ticker.
In the feels.
Oh, yeah. And then... Yeah. You want to say something?
I was waiting for you to finish your thought, man.
No, go ahead, because I stopped because you went... That's my thought.
I really thought someone was going to die. And I
know.
Had been... I kind of had been sold on that, you know, so I was expecting it. And of course, my initial thought was that it was going to be Rocket Raccoon. But that didn't happen. And then I was like, oh my goodness, it's going to be Peter Quill. And then that also didn't happen. But why didn't he wear his mask at all in this movie?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think I wanted to believe there was an explanation that they took off too fast or something, because remember, they weren't supposed to leave nowhere, and then they just ran off because they had no time. They're like, we got to go. We got to get, you know, save Rocket.
But he didn't have it the whole movie.
Well, no, because in the beginning, remember, he was drunk when Adam Warlock showed up, and then they start fighting him, and he goes into, like, this cardiac arrest. Rocket Raccoon goes into cardiac arrest. They're like, we got 48 hours. We got to go. They didn't go back to grab anything. They only had what was on them.
Yeah, but in the first one, it's just like this thing that he hits, and then it forms on his face.
Yeah, but on the first one, he was on a mission. Like, he was prepared. This one, and again, it may have been a little forced for story-wise, but I think that's what the reasoning was, that they didn't actually go and grab their stuff.
That was annoying, because first of all, it's kind of iconic for the character.
It's like Superman without his cape.
Yeah, or like Iron Man. Wasn't it Iron Man 3 or Iron Man 2? Like, there was one of them where, like, which, the one where they, like, played with that, right? And then he, like, ended up making a bunch of things because he didn't have access to his suit or something. It was the second
part
one.
No, it was part 3.
Where he broke into that. Oh, part 3?
Yeah.
Where they, like, kind of played off of that, like, him not having the suit and still building a bunch of things. But, yeah, it'd be like having an Iron Man movie without him ever being in a suit. Yeah. It's like, it was really weird. Like, it really threw me off. I was like, how's he never in his mask? It's his helmet.
Like, again, that's my best.
Didn't like that.
That's my best rationale for it, was that they took off so fast. That's why they didn't have it.
Yeah.
And that's why they needed those little Power Ranger color jumpsuits to jump into space.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about Gamora, like, with the Ravagers.
Well, first of all, that team of Ravagers she's with, I want to see their movie, because they looked awesome when they boarded that ship. They were just taking everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, good Lord.
Yeah. There's just so much in this movie, man, and so long. I also, like, had heard from quite a few people who watched it that they were really emotional about the movie.
Okay.
Which led me to believe, you know, that someone died and that's what triggered such emotions. But I never really felt anything that deep welling up inside of me from anything that happened. I mean, I think they should have shown more about, like, what Rocket Raccoon actually went through.
Yeah.
I felt a little shortchanged, you know, that they really didn't. I mean, they only kind of hinted at it and showed you some things, but I think they still kind of skipped over some of the more maybe gruesome bits.
Like how torturous it was for him.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're saying you wish this movie you thought was long was even longer. I kid. That's a joke.
No.
I don't know. You wish they would have fitted in there better. But my daughter, Willow, has cried every time we've seen it. When? And not to shortchange, because I know they're not main characters, but there are some deaths here. When Lila, Floor, and Teeth die, she cries every time. She cries every time. She also cries, like, and I will say I did get emotional, not so much the other times I watched it, but the very first time I saw it, when they reappear to him in the white light. And he's like, can I go with you? She goes, of course you can. And I remember thinking, oh, they're about to kill Rocket Raccoon. and I'm going to have to deal with my children explaining what's going on here, right? And yeah. then they do another scene and they come back. She goes, but just not now. And you're like, oh, all right, they got me because I thought he was going.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right, he's back. So yeah. So I did feel some feels there. And like I said, it wasn't like full on like crying or anything, but it did get a little bit emotional about, and he's like, why can't I go with you? Because you're not done yet. And yeah. and those scenes were emotional. That's exactly when my daughter just loses it every like four times in a row already. And the other one,
it just felt too. To me like it felt to me like the emotional parts were a little watered down, you know, like mm-hmm. almost like, you know, violence in a PG movie, you know, mm-hmm. that it's people dying without any blood. You know, or stuff like that. Oh. So it kind of felt like there were moments that where they could have just laid it on thicker, you know? Yeah. And so I just felt maybe they didn't go far enough, you know, in really showing pain or sadness, or at least for me, maybe I'm a little cold hearted, but yeah, it just felt a little watered down, you know, and maybe what you're saying about it being a kid's movie, but
like, I don't necessarily think it's a kid's movie, but they have to appeal to kids and to adults. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I understand what you're saying. It's like when there's a drug dealer and he calls everyone sucker instead of, oh, you mother sucker.
Right.
And so, I mean, nobody talks that way. So it is watered down, but there's people like me, like I'm taking my kids to see it because they want to see. But that's why the F-bomb in this movie was more like, it wasn't really necessary. As an adult, man, I found it a little funny. But it wasn't necessarily because I'm taking my kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know they were proud about being the first movie to be an F-bomb, but my kids don't see Deadpool because I expect that language in Deadpool. You know what I mean? And it's hard that they balance a fine line on everything else, except, hey, we're just going to throw an F-bomb in here.
Yeah. Yeah, and even that situation didn't seem like it was that emotionally charged to just kind of inspire that naturally.
Yeah.
Especially when it's so out of place.
Yeah. And it was just frustration. Like you could have got your frustration. Let's just open the door. Like whatever. Like you didn't have to throw it in. They did. I'm like, all right. My kids always do this one thing when we watch a movie and there's a bad word. Like they literally said they're like the gas, like bad word. I'm like, that's all I heard from them. I'm like, okay.
I had something else that had sprung into my mind, but I can't think.
We got like 12 other characters to cover, so.
Can't recall it at the moment. Move on. What's next?
One of the other things I thought was really forced is the Mantis storyline at the end. Where she just she's gonna walk the universe trying to find herself with her three pet monsters. Like to me, that came out of nowhere. Like that one was forced. She goes, no, I need to know who I am. I was like, that literally didn't play at all. Like she's like, I only did what Ego wanted or what the Guardians wanted. I'm like, oh my god, I just felt that one was really forced. Like, hey, you know, we have to give her an ending now.
I watched the Christmas special right before. And then I went right into the movie, so I watched them both back to back. And maybe it's because of the absence of Gamora why Mantis had a bigger role, and also because, you know, what they revealed about her being Peter Quill's sister. Hmm. But it was a little bit too much for her. For me, I should say. You know, Gamora being so different, not really being a part of the group. Also, Rocket Raccoon not really being in the first half of the movie. They had to bring in give another character a bigger role. I just think, while I don't dislike her, she's a little annoying at times. You know, like her voice and even like her look, you know, it's kind of odd looking. So it, to me, it's just the wrong character to have given such a bigger role. You still could have gone with her being the sister thing, but yeah, it, it, it was just, I felt like too big of a role, not for that actress, but just for that character, which is just not, to me, it's, you know, out of all those, probably my least favorite character. You know, I really like Groot in this.
Oh, yeah.
I would have liked even more Groot, you know, because I felt like he was a little underutilized in the movie. But yeah, that was kind of my take on Mantis. And yeah, the end thing was just like, whatever.
Like, the problem with Mantis thing.
I also liked the... Yeah.
Real quick before you go on universe. The problem with Mantis, until you mention you're her sister, and until like every time I watch it, until they mention it, I don't ever equate them to being brother and sister in this movie or the last one. Like, even in the Christmas special, they don't have a dynamic like that at all. It's just because they said it. And again, even when I was talking earlier, I didn't even remember that until you said it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a sister.
Yeah. But they did they like... I only saw the second one once, and
oh, you got to see it.
I should have watched this, but like, didn't her and Peter Quill like share a moment like in part two?
Like, what kind of moment? Like, hey,
you're my. Or like, they just bonded. No, I thought they bonded maybe a little bit more.
There might have been like a little moment, but there was no actual like, you know what I mean? There's no actual thing that they went through and overcame together. I mean, there was no banter. Like, you could see why, like, Peter Quill's close to Rocket and to Drax, because they had all those moments. Mm-hmm. And this just feels like Mantis always feels like she's with Drax or off to whatever. And then they come back and they're like, hey, there's no moments between her and Peter.
Yeah.
Even when she wanted to give him advice, she gave it to Drax to give it to him.
Yeah.
So we never have, like, oh, well, it's Peter and her, like, in the ship together, just talking and, you know, building a relationship.
Yeah.
It just, they tell you. But what were you going to say before I cut you off?
No, I think that's a really good point about them never really having a moment. And you could have easily, you know, written that in. Because even I guess in the Christmas special, when she reveals it to Peter, there's just something about that moment and that reaction that it was just like, I'm not buying it. You know, or it just didn't feel organic. It was like, I think what you said, they just like kind of don't really have a lot of chemistry, those two characters. So it just really kind of like felt awkward. They really didn't even continue to build much off of that in the third one.
Like I said, wasn't the biggest fan of the second one. It's there.
Why didn't you like the second one?
Like, it's not bad. It just exists like an episode. Like, if it was a TV show, it'd just be an episode. Like, I think the first one did really good with dealing with them and growth. The second one just happens so they could deal with Peter Quill's dad, introduce the sister. It doesn't really have much of a role. And then Yondu dies. And then the third one, I felt like this had a
that
lot.
That was the best part of that one movie.
Yeah, Yondu?
Yondu's part. That was the highlight of that movie.
Well, it's one of them. The opening scene with little baby Groot dancing was kind of cool. But there's not much for that movie. Like, if we sat here, I'm like, oh, what do you remember? Not much. I mean, because it's okay. It's just to get everyone where they have to be. And again, I'm not saying it's bad. There's people who love that movie. I just thought it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's forgettable.
Yeah.
Like, if you go from one to three, that's fine, too.
What were your thoughts on Nebula?
When you were talking about they could have given, like, a bigger role to somebody else, they could have given it to Nebula. Because she's shown a lot of growth since, you know, she was just this hench woman. And she grew a lot where... And I don't know why I liked it. And my daughters do it every time we watch the movie, when her and Gamora would just grunt at each other. Like, you know what I mean? Then they just start grunting to each other all the time. Like, and I did. I thought her and Gamora, even in this, just in this movie, showed more of a sister bond, a sibling bond, than Peter and Mantis. But I just felt like I wish they would have gone more into her, because she became more caring. She was more of a, hey, I want to look after the team because everyone, Peter's acting weird, everything's falling apart. And I do like the fact that she said, okay, I want to run nowhere. She's going to look after the city and help build that that society. Because she did start became a person who was somebody who was operated on, rejected by Thanos and all this stuff. And now she wants to take care of all these misfits.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wish we would have maybe had her even more involved than we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I thought she had a pretty big role, but yeah, I mean, certainly, I don't know. I guess yeah. I guess I kind of disagree a little bit. I felt like her role was big enough. I think for me the one that got
the shaft
utilized that should have been used more was just Groot. I felt like there wasn't a lot of him.
Well, at all. Maybe he was phenomenal when he went kaiju, when they broke into the high evolutionaries thing, and he just started going nuts.
Yeah.
And even when he jumped down, you saw the wings come out. Yeah. Everything about him was great. And his ending, phenomenal.
So is that, like, when that happened, I was like, whoa, did they just, like, break a comic book law here or something? Like, by having him say something other than I am Groot? Like, that threw me off a little bit.
Okay, so what it is he says in reality, I am Groot. But you know how everyone else hears him? And they showed us even with Gamora. Gamora, like, she goes, yes, he keeps saying the same thing. Y'all are just making it up. And then at the end, he goes, I am Groot. She goes, yeah, it was good work. She goes, oh, she realized she could hear him now because she's bonded with him. So what that end is he's saying, I am Groot. But now that we've gone on this journey with him, we can understand what Groot is saying.
Oh, okay.
Because I remember we all freaked out. We're like, whoa. And then that's when I looked it up and like it. That's what people were saying, and James Gunn confirmed it. He goes, yeah, you now the audience can understand what Groot is saying because of this journey that we've taken with them.
And so that's faithful to the comic books?
What basically, because people understand him, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, all right, stuff like that. Cool. He just, except if you're new, you don't understand him, and then eventually, like, everyone else understands him. Which is, there was a funny one when he's talking to Jean Grey, and there's a huge bubble with this whole speech he's giving, and then there's another word bubble over it that says, I am Groot. But then, because she's reading his mind, she can see everything else that's happening behind it.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty cool thing.
Okay, that's cool. The another Earth or another world, Counter-Earth. Yeah, I don't think I liked that part of the movie. And even just that the way that whole thing played out with it was just out of place. And so they end up on this they enter this planet trying to find sort of like the headquarters for the high evolutionary. Drax forgets to put the cloak on, so they're seen. All these people freak out. But yet, it isn't a bigger deal. Like, it's still only a big deal in this neighborhood where, like, the neighbors are, like, looking through the window. Like, police aren't called or military or anything like that. And then this one lady with this family inexplicably just kind of sympathizes with them, even though they can't understand each other at all. They speak a completely different language, but then they end up helping each other, and he takes her car, and like just that whole those scenes and just that part of the movie was like it just felt out of place, and it just it didn't work for me.
I thought we were gonna say is when they first were landing, you know, the panda mowing his lawn, like to me looked like a man in a panda suit. Like, shit. And all the good graphics they did, like, I did not like that one. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever seen The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah. Like, I haven't seen it, but I know of it. Yeah,
I felt like they're all half like all these experiments. That's what I felt we were seeing with like the bad ears and everything. I'm like, okay. I thought the war pig and the security that High Evolutionary done.
War pig. Yep.
I thought they were really well done. I was like, okay, now this is something that looks totally like hitting you in the face, as opposed to the society. I'm like, all right, they're just people with like some bad ears on. But War Pig and the other one, like Rocksteady Bebop, that's what my daughter called them.
Yeah.
Like, they were awesome. And to answer why no one was called, is High Evolutionary already knew they were coming. And remember, it's a trap, it's a face off. So that's why they were waiting for them to leave their ship so War Pig can go and retrieve the rocket.
Okay. Makes sense. I don't know if Dr. Moreau was actually an inspiration for this.
Oh, see? I did not know that, but it's with Marlon Brando. And I remember seeing it in theaters, and that's what a lot of these things reminded me of. And again, it's not bad. I wish they would have pushed it more so they didn't just look like humans with like bat ears. They look like, let's say, a bat that became a human, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because like that first experiment that High Evolutionary messed up on in front of Rocket, that turtle that was becoming human, that thing looked like it was going to look crazy. And then it went crazy, and then they killed it. Like, I wanted stuff like that looked way out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... and I get it, because they wanted, a wider appeal. But I think this movie would have benefited from going darker just a little bit. You know, you don't have to go, deep dark, but there's some things where it could have used a little bit of darkness.
Like there was that one animal, I think Gamora or Mantis that freed this little sheep looking thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, it was like an ugly looking mutant thing.
Yeah. I said thank you.
Yeah, it was Pete Davidson, I believe. That's it. That was voiced him. It was supposed to be Stan Lee, but he passed away, I believe. And then he just says thank you. And I was like, all right, now that's what I was looking for. I was looking for some weird stuff like that. Yeah. Not necessarily that, but something like that.
Yeah. Or even, again, with the torture scene, with the torture stuff, could have just gone a little bit darker. Even at the beginning with like Peter Quill like being drunk, I didn't really buy him. Like, it could have been a little bit darker to like where he's maybe teetering on alcoholism, or something like that, or like his depression is like really dark, so there's like potentially emotional things that they just don't go deep enough in them to give them, like a more weight, throughout the story, to really kind of hit harder at times.
Well, yeah, and it is the Marvel way, because even in Iron Man 2, like, they were trying to do the storyline where Tony's drinking too much and he has an alcoholism problem. He's an alcoholic. But but they watered that down because, you also have kids. Because even when you were saying, it was like, yeah, it would have been cool if, like, he was teetering with his gun and he wants to like end it all or whatever. Like, he's really depressed. But then I was like, oh, I don't think it's for little kids also. They need to entertain children and adults. And then again, if I'm complaining about the F-bomb, I'm like, I would have been like, I don't think my kid needs to see somebody wanting to blow their brains out.
No, but
that's just me.
Again, and that it doesn't have to be that, that example, but there are, when you compare, and this is interesting actually, because I guess the other day, Ophi, she's going to be 3 in a couple weeks. She doesn't listen to a lot of Disney movies, or Disney music. I've tried to play some for her. I mean, she liked the Encanto music for a while. But she does like, I Just Can't Wait to Be King from Lion King.
She has good taste.
And I guess they were listening to it the other day, and my wife came back and she was like, I guess she was like, oh, maybe daddy will let you watch the movie, when we get home. And then she asked me, and I was like, no, she cannot watch that movie. Not yet. Because it's pretty dark at times. I mean, not only with the hyenas and all that, but with Mufasa's death. And I do remember, even hearing how, Disney in a lot of their movies, didn't shy away from that and kind of maybe even traumatize children. And so I just think she's a little bit too young to be like, what's happening to him? And why is Simba like going under his paw, and why is he sad? Like, for me, she's just a little bit too young for that. But clearly, I mean, I was definitely older when that movie came out. But those movies are for kids. And I mean, we could argue if, when is too young for that, but still, those movies are meant for children. And so I think it proves that I mean, if she was a little bit older, I think it's a great conversation to have, through those scenes and through what's happening there, to talk about that. Just maybe not at, almost 3 years old. But anyway, I think it proves a point that there is an age and there is a way to show some of those, dark things, in a way that it's still maybe not what we're talking about with Rocket Raccoon and the graphic of like his torture. Like, okay, that I get. But maybe, yeah, if Peter was an alcoholic or something like that, like I do think there are ways to toe that line a little bit better than kind of how watered down some of those things felt in this movie.
Well, I do agree with that. It's just that those movies came out in the early 90s, mid 90s. And now today, like, everyone's so much more up in arms about what they show. Cause and also this is my little hypocrisy. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want my kids seeing that, but I took them to go see John Wick 4 in theaters. You know what I mean? I'm like, cause we know what they can handle. And it ultimately it has to be, no matter what you watch, it's up to the parents, like you said. Like, yeah, three, maybe three's a little too, too young for you to watch, The Lion King. And nowadays, like I said, sensibilities are so much different that it's harder, because you have, and again, I don't know James Gunn from anyone, right? So I don't know what his mentality is. I'm guessing he's more of liberal from what I've seen stuff. So he may just be like, hey, I don't think they should do this, and those are just his opinions on that, or I might be totally wrong. I don't know if I made sense right there.
Well, I think there, well, just to continue that conversation, I think there probably is an age that is just too young, but I think also, like, people know their children, right? And they all, you also know, what they've been exposed to or what they've experienced, up to a certain point. And so maybe what they're able to handle, or what conversations they're ready for. Like perhaps if your child is still a little bit young, but they've had a grandparent that has died or whatever that they were close with, maybe they're ready for a conversation that is sparked off of Mufasa dying in Lion King or something like that. So I think yeah, that if you're a parent that's involved and knows your children pretty well, then maybe you also know, yeah, what they're prepared for, also just based off of conversations that you're having with them, and again, what they've experienced or what they've been exposed to, perhaps.
I can tell you with my daughters, all of them, between the ages of 3 and 5, we have a conversation about death. I remember having it with Ava and Phoenix together. Like, we were driving home from school. I'm like, hey, girls, let's just start. And we just started talking about death and what happens. Because I guess my mentality, and it still is I rather have this conversation with them when I'm not grieving, like the passing of my mother. You know what I mean? Because if my mom's passing and I'm grieving, now I'm grieving and I need to explain to my children what happened. It, I think, adds more to it. So I remember just doing, and man, I was just like, all right, well, do you know what death is? You know what happens? We talked about the spirit going with the Lord, all this stuff. And literally, I'm like, well, one day, you know, like, it'll be far from now. Like, it'll happen. Like, one day I will leave you and hopefully you can remember. Dude, all you heard was tears in the car. They're like, we don't want you to die. I'm like, I'm not dying anytime soon, I hope. And they were just, because again, they're 3 and 5. So to them, there was no logic in me having this conversation at that time with them. Yeah. But then they cried and we got some ice cream and then we talked about it some more later. And they were better. I guess it was better than after school when they're tired and, hey, yeah, we got to kill 30 minutes. Let daddy tell you about death and what happens to the body, ashes to ashes. And it did come in handy when their grandfather did pass away and their great-grandmother within a week. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like Phoenix and Ava, even though they were sad, like Phoenix would tell everyone, was like, oh, well, you know, the body's dead, but the spirit's with God. We'll see him one day. You know what I mean? And so she was still like, not happy, but it made her feel better to let people know that she'll see her grandpa one day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm definitely in the camp, I think, of sooner rather than later. But, you know, how much sooner, I think, is just, again, there's different variables. But as far as it pertains to this film, in my opinion and my experience of the movie, I think it could have used some
more darkness.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Yeah.
And what else was there? What about the what do you think about the final after credit scene?
Great. I mean, I'm just puzzled and curious about what the future holds for our beloved Star-Lord. I don't have great feelings about it. Number one, because I feel like this film was an exception to, again, most of what Marvel is doing. I mean, the most recent trailer, aside from, Blue Beetle is DC, right?
Yeah, it's DC.
So it was like, what, the Marvels?
Yeah.
Looks terrible. So, it does. I mean, that's just my opinion of the trailer. It looked terrible. It could be great, but it looked terrible. That's all I'm saying. And I wasn't a big fan of that movie, Captain Marvel. Yeah, it was a terrible movie.
I didn't like Captain Marvel. I did like the show Miss Marvel. I watched with the girls, and that was enjoyable. And so I think that character, I'm intrigued to see her around the other ones. And and disclaimer, I'm cool with Brie Larson. She looks cute. Sure. So I might be there for that.
All right. That's out there. Okay.
That's an eye roll for everyone out there. But
anyway, so I do feel like this movie is kind of an exception to that, this Guardians movie. So that is not encouraging for me moving forward. But I do also feel like, I don't know, it kind of feels like Chris Pratt would be better served just walking away from this character at this point.
I think it's what James Gunn said, the idea for a solo Star-Lord movie, and this is what he would like, would be the opposite of, you know, when you take a human into space and they're out of their element, is now you're taking a person who's only lived in space since he was 8, and now you put him on Earth, and there's an adventure on Earth, but it's more, he has to deal with the way, like, humans on Earth operate. He's not used to any of that. So it'd be like a fish out of water.
It'd be Elf.
Like Elf with lasers.
Yeah. No, I think he'd be better served just walking away from the character, man. Just laying it to rest.
I think the only thing that gives me hope is A, he doesn't have to do it if he doesn't like the script. And B, I don't like much he does, but Bob Iger, like, pulling back on everything, saying, hey, we've done way too much. We've been flooding everything. We need to pull back, and we're going to take our time making movies. We're not I think the guy who took over for him, Bob Chapek or whatever, he was just greenlighting everything. Hey, let's just do it. Yeah. And as much as Kevin Feige has done great with the original slate of movies that they did, mm-hmm. I think he benefits from being reined in a bit. Mm-hmm. Saying, hey, you can't do whatever you want. We're going to pull it back. We're going to switch mm-hmm. it up and like take your time developing these movies, not just pumping them out because your bosses want more content.
Yeah. Yeah. What was I going to say?
Because most of the movies in 4 that weren't that great were under the other guy, not Bob Iger.
Right. Is there any possibility of either a side project or a reboot with this sort of what was teased at the end as a new Guardians team?
Well, that's led very
by Rocket Raccoon and Nebula.
Well, that's very opened. Is there a possibility? Yeah. You know what I mean? Is it likely? Probably not anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Because they would probably do a Star-Lord. Like, if anything, they would do Star-Lord and maybe have Rocket and Groot visit him mm-hmm. at the end or make an appearance. Because I definitely know Dave Bautista said he's done. Gamora's mm-hmm. done. Like, they don't want to do the makeup anymore. They're just over it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if a lot of them, I don't know if they would come back. You know what I mean? Without James Gunn. But like I said, that's why it's so open. Like, is there a possibility? Yeah, it's never zero.
He's done with Marvel, huh? He's going to be DC now.
Who, Dave Bautista?
James Gunn.
Oh, James Gunn. Yeah, he's the head of DC, like co-head of DC right. Films now. Yeah. So yeah, so he is done. And then okay. We'll see how he does when he's the. I don't have high hopes for the slate of projects they announced.
Superman, right?
Yeah, well, he himself is doing Superman, so I think that'll be great. Yeah. I don't know how the other movies are going to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he can't make every movie. Mm-hmm. And I will say the past few stuff I saw Peacemaker, I saw the Suicide Squad. I love them both. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I thought they were fun movies. I think Superman's going to be really great. I know the guy who's doing Flash is doing the Batman movie. For the DC universe. Mm-hmm. And again, I haven't seen The Flash, so I can't judge it, but I didn't hear great things about it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of bad things.
Well, besides Stephen King saying it's the greatest comic movie ever made. But that's Stephen King.
Didn't Tom Cruise, like, wasn't Tom Cruise raving about it as well at one point?
I don't know about that. Like, I know I would have to look
he
at
was,
it.
But... Look at it. I think he said, like, I've seen The Flash. It was awesome or something like that.
Oh, wow.
He gave it, like, a good review. Yeah. Which of this wave of Marvel movies, so I guess it's what, post-Endgame, would it be?
Yeah. Like, Phase 4 is after Endgame.
Which one has been your least... Which was the worst one in your eyes
that I've actually seen?
Yeah,
I haven't been able to finish Thor: Love and Thunder.
Dude, it's the worst. That's my worst one.
I don't know if it's I don't like I'll probably like Quantumania if I see it because it's just who I am. So I can't judge the ones I didn't see, but I didn't even like Wakanda Forever. I didn't but at least I finished it.
Yeah,
I just haven't been able to finish Love and Thunder, and it could be because I think I just sat down and I was like, you know, I have to revisit this because I love Ragnarok.
Ragnarok is so good. Yeah,
it's amazing. So I was watching. Yeah. I was like, I thought it was just me. I'm like, maybe I'm just not in the mood for this, but
no, it's really bad. I haven't seen Wakanda Forever. I didn't see Shang-Chi. What was it? Wasn't there another one that came out? I heard Shang-Chi is pretty good. Wasn't there another one that came out like around Shang-Chi? Like a female that one?
The Eternals.
The Eternals. I didn't finish it. I didn't like it.
I haven't even watched it. I go to start it. I'm like, I just feel like I'm not in the mood for a type of movie.
The Doctor Strange one was terrible. Did not like Quantumania. But yeah, Love and Thunder was the worst one.
And I think the only one I would rate under that, it's a TV show. I tried watching She-Hulk and I could not. could not. I was like, people are raving about like this episode because Daredevil. I'm like, well, let me watch. I think I got through the opening. I was like, nope, this ain't for me.
Apparently, Secret Invasion is the worst one.
I don't know, like.
So I don't know if you've tried watching that.
Well, we've seen 3 out of the 6 episodes because then we wanted it to finish and then we haven't gone back to it.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently the finale is like the worst. So, yeah, I mean, they haven't made good decisions, but it's hard to tell. I mean, yeah, that's without a doubt. But I personally do believe there's also a little bit of superhero fatigue involved with that. Now, I think as it relates to superhero fatigue, I think a great movie would immediately reverse that. But I think, and I think not just fatigue from the audience, but I mean from the production companies. You know, just like with Star Wars, it's like, dude, just give it a break for a while. You know, it's just too much.
And I think that's what it is. When you're rushing so much stuff to put out there, like creatively, like you think as a creator, like, oh, this is so original. I'm like, yeah, but we saw versions of that 2 other movies that were in production at the same time as you were.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, like, when we're talking about TV shows, like, you saw WandaVision, right?
That's the only show that I've watched and finished.
Like,
yeah,
I liked WandaVision because that was unique. That was creative.
Yeah,
I did like the first Loki. You know, season. Season 2 is about.
Didn't
to come
you
out.
Like Moon Knight?
I liked Moon Knight. I just felt like it was just getting started when it finished. It took so long to kick in. With the one I really liked that nobody seems to like, I really liked the Hawkeye series. Because again, it felt different because it was just about Hawkeye. He's losing his hearing. He's having trouble, and then he meets this girl, and he doesn't want to train her. But then they start like building a relationship, and that just builds up. So I actually enjoyed that. But again, other than that, just you start pushing so much stuff, you're just like, all right, I'm just getting a little I've seen different versions of what you're showing me.
Yeah.
Like instead of watching some of the
favorite show,
it's probably my favorite. It's really good. The first Daredevil.
Did you watch season Punisher? 1.
Oh yeah, like I watched Punisher.
The John
and I liked
Benton one.
Yeah, it had 2 seasons. I think I only seen season 1 though, and I liked it. It's just I think I liked him better in Daredevil. Did you watch all of Daredevil or no?
No. Oh, I don't know why I stopped, but yeah, I never finished it.
Like him in season 2 of Daredevil, it gives him this more realistic, like gritty person going against this superhero. You know what I mean? And being against him with him type of thing. And I like that more. I watched a show and it was more gritty, more realistic. But I was like, all right, that's not I like seeing him in this world where he's thriving as opposed to he shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Any last things you want to say before we wrap this up with some fun facts?
Let me see. Do I have anything else? Like I know after we start recording, I'm like, oh, I had all these things I wanted to talk about, but I think we covered everything. We went through everybody, right? We went through all the Guardians.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone we missed except Adam Warlock's little pet, but we don't need to talk about him.
Well, since you're asking it, what was interesting too about Rocket Raccoon was that after he woke up from his close call with death, he also wasn't the same Rocket Raccoon. He was, like a person who had been through a near-death experience, he was like a lot more positive. And so again, I'm not complaining about that. Like I thought that was fine, but there's still a part of me that feels like I got gypped on a Guardians of the Galaxy movie without Rocket, the Rocket Raccoon that I know and love.
So
that was a little weird.
I will say though, come on, but it was a pretty cool scene when he was finally, High Evolutionary kept calling him like P, whatever. He's like, the name's Rocket. raccoon, because he finally accepts that he's a raccoon.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, that was cool. There was another part that you had just mentioned. But yeah, like I said, I didn't feel gypped by him, but I do understand how they could have gone more. Oh, that's the one thing. I wish they would have ended his flashback series even when he left. You know what I mean? They could have just shown him being in space and how did he meet Groot? That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe coming upon the full-grown Groot already, and he's like, hey, and that they become friends, because, you know, Groot maybe took him in at first, and now, he's raising Groot's son.
Raccoons make their homes in trees.
Oh.
That would have been interesting.
That is. Yeah, because it would have been a cool dynamic that older Groot, because apparently they're two different ones, the first Groot was taking care of Rocket, and they became friends and, you know, colleagues. Mm-hmm. And then when he dies, like, now he's raising Groot's son, Groot Jr.
Yeah.
Groot. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, by the way, in Infinity War, you know when Groot disappears and he goes, I am Groot? Like, maybe. What he says when he's disappearing is he goes, Dad, help. And then he disappears. I was like, ooh.
How'd you learn that?
I think I read it like way back when I was reading up on the movie after it came out. Uh-huh. Like, I think James Gunn's like, yeah, or not James Gunn, one of the brothers were like, oh yeah, what that dialogue he's saying is, Dad, help. Uh-huh. And then he disappears.
And he's addressing Rocket Raccoon?
Yeah, because he's reaching for him and then he gets dusted.
Mm. Nice. So. Good old Vin Diesel.
Vinny, as I call him.
Yeah.
So are we ready?
I'm ready. Woo! Let's see if I can surprise you with any of these.
Okay.
Not an easy task. Well, the first one's a trivia. I'm going to sandwich these facts with trivia. So the first one's trivia and the last one's trivia. Let's see how on the ball you are, Kevin. First one, released exactly 6 years after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in 2017, this marks the longest gap between an MCU film and its sequel, surpassing the record set by what two other movies?
Between an original and a sequel?
Yeah, the longest time span in between. So this one was 6 years. The other two were 5 years and 6 months apart.
I would have to say, probably going to be wrong on these, but I'm going to go with Captain America 1 and 2.
That is incorrect. The answer is Doctor Strange.
Oh, okay.
And Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Oh, that was the biggest gap?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought there were two. Okay, those were the two movies. I thought there were two sequels that were the same distance apart.
No. No. We'll come back to trivia.
That was a good one.
Thanks. This film sets the record for the most makeup appliances used in a single film, having more than 23,000 prosthetics used across more than 1,000 actors.
Most of that was for Counter-Earth, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. And for Nova, probably.
Oh, true.
Okay. Nebula has a new nanotech weave arm in this film, which was an upgrade made for her by Rocket. Director James Gunn confirmed Rocket made this arm for Nebula to thank her for gifting him Bucky's detached vibranium arm in the holiday special.
I wish they would have said that in the movie.
I did like that scene from Nebula when she was like, I'm going to save Rocket Raccoon. Like, he made me this arm, and like, that was a cool moment for her.
That was
another one.
You'll appreciate this one because I know you love this man. Nathan Fillion plays Master Carja, Fillion has appeared in each Guardians of the Galaxy film, each time playing a different role. In the first one, he voiced a CGI character named Monstrous Inmate. And in Volume 2, he appeared on film posters in the background as actor Simon Williams, a.k.a. Wonder Man.
That one I knew.
All right.
Do you know who he was in the first one?
I think they said he was a monster when they were doing like the lineup.
No, it's when they first show up and they want Peter Quill. And then I think Groot grabs him by the nostrils and lifts him up. And they beat they toss him. And then that's when he's like, this guy's our bounty. He goes, our booty. If you want him, you got to go through us. Or more correctly, we go through you. That it's that guy they throw. Okay. Sorry.
Excellent.
Not the one.
This is the next round of trivia and final round of trivia for you. So far, you're 0-1. Let's see if you can even the score.
I'm the New York Giants. Let's go.
This is the third trilogy in the MCU to have the same director for all three films. What are the other two?
There's two more trilogies that have the same director?
That's what I said.
That's not. Is that possible? That's not possible. That is not possible. I'm trying to think of all the trilogies, and I don't think I'm going to get this because John Favreau didn't do three. He did two. I'm going to be does Spider-Man count?
That's one of them.
Okay.
2017 through 2021, okay. Directed by John Watts.
Okay, so I was like, we got that one. And I'm only going to take 10 seconds. If I can't guess it, I will give up. I'm not going to guess it. There's not. Yeah, because the Russo brothers did two Captain Americas and two Avengers, so I don't know it.
Ant-Man and the Wasp films, directed by Peyton Reed.
Oh, I should have known that one.
Valid attempt, though. I'm proud of you for trying. Those were tough.
Dude, Ant-Man didn't even come into my mind one time when I was
doing. Yeah, I figured.
And I love 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right, so ratings time. Again, if you have stuck with us throughout this episode and you are a first-timer, let me remind you, or let me inform you, that we do a 1 to 5 rating, Little Jerry's rating scale. One Little Jerry's, basically meaning that the movie was atrocious, and 5 Little Jerry's, saying that we loved it. So, Kevin, your pick, you're up first.
Oh. All right. My little ratings music. All right, once more with feeling, as they say. This movie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, brought to you by Mr. James Gunn. It's a movie that's fun. It's a movie that's good. It's enjoyable. They are, as in most movies, even a sci-fi comic book movie, suspend belief a little bit, enjoy yourself. There's some cool things you'll see. It may seem long the first time. It seemed rather short every other time I've seen it. My kids liked it. I enjoyed it. I'm going to give it a whopping 4 out of 5 because I would recommend it. I've watched it many times again, and it's been enjoyable every time I've seen it.
4 out of 5?
4 or 4 the okay. Single.
All right. 4 out of 5 for this movie. That doesn't leave you much for like the movies that you really liked, like Ragnarok. So if, assuming that you would give Ragnarok a 5 out of 5.
I wouldn't give Ragnarok a 5 out of 5, but it's good. It's a solid like 4.5, 4. 4.75.
Okay. So this is then this, pretty much on par with Ragnarok. I told you,
if those are like on level ones, this is probably just right below. Like if we had like a 5-tier like slot them in, this would be in the tier right below them. Like, let's say there's Jordan, Kobe, LeBron. This is in the tier right underneath with, you know, the Wades and Tim Duncans and Olajuwons of the world.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose that's fair. All right. For me, only having watched this once, again, felt a little long. Ultimately, I think it's what, like 2.5 hours. That's kind of long, but fine. But the fact that it felt long, I don't think speaks well to some of what was presented. There were definitely some questionable choices, while also some things I really liked. Definitely not as good as the first one. So this is a tough one for me. I think that, am I itching to like run and watch this again? Not really. That doesn't mean I wouldn't watch it again though, but I'm not in a rush.
I do have something that may sway your opinion that I forgot to mention.
Okay, go ahead.
Which I didn't realize until after you told me you had seen it, and I went to watch it again. Apparently, if you're going to watch this on Disney Plus, do not watch it on the IMAX Enhanced version, which is the default. You have to go down to versions and watch the theatrical release, because James Gunn said that's his preferred way, because even though they filmed it in IMAX, like, he specifically does things in the movie where it's smaller and then it gets bigger and it comes down again. And in IMAX, there it doesn't ever change its aspect ratio. Mm-hmm. And as a filmmaker, he did it on purpose, because when it seems more impactful, whatever, it gets bigger and then it goes down. And he plays around with that as a movie maker. And IMAX, when you watch it IMAX Enhanced, it just stays on the full frame. There is no, like, shrinking or widening of the frame for, like, emotional reasons.
That's interesting. I wonder how much of a difference that would make. I definitely watched it on the default. So,
which, yeah, because I had to, when I read it, I had to look it up and follow instructions, because I was like, wait, what is it? And then I'm like, right when you, the play where it says play, you go down, it says extras and versions, and you would have to switch it out.
That's kind of infuriating, actually.
Because I remember thinking, like, I didn't mention it to you because I was like, oh, you already said you watched it. So there's, like, we'll talk about it during the thing. Yeah. So.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting. That actually makes me want to rate it lower.
No, but now you can rewatch it.
That's annoying.
Yeah, and it's not James Gunn's fault. That's Disney that did that.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay. Okay. I'm going to go with a 3.75, because unlike you, who say that, you know, there's this top tier and then there's a lower tier where this fits, while I agree that there's a top tier, I don't think all the movies that I would have in that top tier are all fives, for example. Those also would vary in ratings. Probably somewhere between a 4, 5. It's probably somewhere between 4 and 5. They just wouldn't all be fives. And I don't think this one makes that list. It still, like you, would be on a lower list. But 3.5 seems a little low, to be fair. So it's a 3.75 for me.
Okay.
3.75.
I won't quibble over a quarter point. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, a better offering from Marvel, but the bar is pretty low at this point.
Yeah. And again, maybe just because we were in a desert of movies and this came out, and I was like, man, this was, like I said, it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I mean, these are fun, you know, lovable characters that we've fallen in love with throughout many films. But it also, yeah, it does kind of feel like, and it's also so deceptive because they've only had two standalone films, right? But yes. But they've also made appearances in quite a few of the other films, right? Yeah. I mean, obviously Infinity Wars and Endgame, but
Thor, Love and Thunder.
In Love and Thunder, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, in Love and Thunder. Then they had their holiday special and things like that. So, yeah, they've been around a bit. And so, yeah, it seems like a time to kind of move on. And we'll see what happens next. As we discussed, maybe it's a Peter Quill standalone movie with some cameos. Maybe it's a reboot with a new team. Who knows? We'll see.
And I think even if they don't, we don't see them again, I do feel this movie gave most of them, you know, definitive resolutions where we're like, yeah, they're still in the universe, but now we know where everyone is and what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, cool. All right. We will go ahead and nip this one in the bud. Kevin, thanks for the pick. And so, next episode, again, will be our season finale. It is our review number 30 for the season, although we've done more episodes than that with special episodes. But it will be the 30th film that we review in season 2. Then looking forward to a hiatus and then hopefully coming back to review some more films as well as provide some more special episodes, trailer reactions, you know,
some other surprises in store.
Some other surprises and yet the same old buffoonery that you have come to expect from us. And I guess the biggest what do you call it, cliffhanger is will we see Mark again?
Oh, jube jube.
You know? We don't even know. So we're in suspense just as much as our audience. But anyway, like I said at the beginning, please, you know, make sure you follow us, subscribe, like, add us, comment, write us an email if you'd like. Go to our website and check out posters for all the films that we've reviewed and the ratings for every film that we've reviewed. You know, let us know if you want us to give you a film recommendation or if you have a film that you want us to check out and review. You know, don't hesitate to interact with us or even to give us a nice pat on the back. We always appreciate that as well. We pat ourselves on the back all the time, but it's nice to get the feel of another human being sometimes, even if it's just metaphorically. So anyway, with that being said, my pick next. Excited for that. Thank you for listening. Don't stop believing. I'm out.
Later.